Live from Burbank, California, the world capital of variant genes, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's safe for consumption, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? How are you, you sulkers? If there are any David Blaine fans out there, turn off your radios. Get away. Who the hell cares about that guy sitting in a bubble for a week? Who gives a crap? And he apparently went into convulsions. Are we supposed to feel sad for him? Wait, don't tell me the demanding, attention-grubbing Jew in the bubble had some problems breathing on his stupid prank. What is he, just like a testament to wasting time? Who the hell cares? What is that? That's not even a trick. He was in the bubble for a week. His skin started peeling off. His liver and kidneys started breaking down. And is he a hero? Does he deserve a medal of some kind? He's a moron.
Just like the original bubble boy. What the hell was that?
No, he was really sick, that guy.
Oh.
The real bubble boy. And the real bubble boy wasn't in water.
I take that back.
You ought to take that back. That guy was sick. He had a disease.
He came out of nowhere.
He couldn't talk to anybody. David Blaine's just this guy that sits around playing cards with a bunch of rich friends and goes, dudes, I'm going to get in a bubble of water. And they're like, oh, that'd be excellent. Will the TV tape you doing that? And they go, and he says, yeah, I think they will. So, oh, that's cool, man.
You're telling me that little kid wasn't a magician then?
No, the little kid had a disease.
He never played Vegas?
No. Well, they tried to take it on the road, but it required a lot. It's hard to travel with that much equipment. And actually, the show was a little slow for some people, just to see a kid try to build blocks with his spelling blocks, and it was sad. It really didn't take off. They had it circus right in the middle, right in the showroom. Yeah, didn't take off though. We got a hell of a show today, man. A lot of questions are going to be answered today. Ari Berman from The Nation is going to talk to us. He's going to do the news crunch with us coming up very shortly. Patton Oswalt is a fellow that does funny things here and there on the television, on CD, on DVD. Sometimes he'll come to my house and just stand out front just saying, I got a new bit. You know, wait, hear this new bit. I got a funny bit. And I'm like, Patton, I'm sleeping. He's like, all right, I'll just wait until you get up.
It just sounds like Buddy Hackett or something. What?
Patton's got something going. It's a mixture. I used to think it was sort of like the Penguin, but it's something else. It's Pattonese, he speaks. Michael Poland, you better have some questions prepared for this guy. This is your guy.
Questions? I have accusations.
Accusations? Okay, Mr. Self-Righteous Vegetarian. Here's a guy that writes a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, actually does some sincere investigative reporting about how agribusiness screws up the world, about how organics may not be as good as we think they are, about organic farming, about why we make choices about food as opposed to other animals that don't have the same problem. And you saying you're already accusing him, you already have a problem with his position. Is that what you're saying to me, Jim?
I'm saying I didn't read his book. I'm not prepared.
Okay, well then,
no,
maybe
but
you'll
I
learn
do.
Something.
I do have questions.
All right, Svetlana's going to be here, the hooker / movie reviewer. She's going to talk about Coachella and about a movie. I think Friends with Money is the movie. And Mort Mortensen. What do you make of this? I got an email from my dad this morning. It says, "Have you checked out Nostradamus?" A 16th century physician who had predicted all the evil and natural disaster end times of today, and then it's ... may be correct. As if my dad sold on it. Someone turned him onto a book about Nostradamus. He's like, I don't know. Seems pretty reasonable to me.
Hey, how about this Satan guy?
Yeah, this Satan guy seems reasonable. He's got this place called Hell. Have you heard of it? I don't know.
A lot of fun.
I don't know. Maybe it's, call me crazy, but it might be real. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit, certainly with Ari Berman. I'm going to try and answer a bunch of questions and deal with the news for the most part with him. But this General Michael Hayden is problematic in a lot of ways. And we talked about it yesterday. I want to get to the bottom of it and make sure he doesn't get confirmed and the CIA doesn't get completely taken under the wing of the Pentagon. But before we get into that stuff, can I just blow some smoke up the boss's butt? Would that be all right? Look, I am no Springsteen fan, okay? I am not a Springsteen fan. I liked a couple of his songs. I was born in New Jersey, but I got out before that became important to become a Springsteen fan. But this new Seeger Sessions album, it made me understand, once again, why Bruce Springsteen is so well-loved and why he is sort of a musical phenomenon and a great musical artist. These are old folk songs. They're actually somewhat hackneyed old folk songs that have been done a lot by a lot of people, but not in many years. And the amazing thing about this record, it's all done acoustically. He's got great musicians. He's got La Bamba and Mark from Conan's band, the trombone player and the trumpet player, genius musicians. And even the cover is a little affected. It's that sepia daguerreotype cover where they show all the musicians sitting in a rented old house doing the hootenanny thing. How many times can you see that before it's devoid of any integrity whatsoever? But you put that thing into the CD player and bam! Right away, you're cruising with acoustic music, with folk songs, just reinterpreted by Springsteen, and each one of them moves. It's personal. He does a version of "Mary, Don't You Weep" that I could never have imagined, and it's really one of those records that you put in, and you're like, this is the real deal, and every song on the album. And the thing I realized, I was talking to Sweepy Bill Kohler about it before the show, is that you take folk songs, and Bill actually made a comment about how he wished he'd gotten more esoteric folk songs, but these are folk songs that everyone knows. I actually consider sending the CD to my father. Is that Springsteen drive, that thing that made the momentum of the E Street Band so appealing and so energetic to so many people, myself not being one of them, he brings to an acoustic version. He brings to these folk songs, and it seems real earnest. He doesn't have to do this record. You know, he's been doing music for 30 years or so, and this was the kind of music he wanted to investigate, and he made it. He made it great, and it really it transcends, and it does have that communal feeling that you want folk music to have. And I am no fan, but I'm just telling you, I thought it was great. It's a great
album. That's a very, very positive review.
I haven't heard the new Neil Young album. I know that's a lot of people are critical of Bruce. Like, he could have chosen more anti-war songs. But you got to realize a lot of folk songs were just about the spirit of humanity, the spirit of the populace, the spirit of the people coming together and transcending whatever difficulties, whatever obstacles, whatever injustices may be in front of them.
Goober peas?
Goober peas, big problem. Big problem. Can you overcome them? And I think that if you listen to the Seeger section, the Seeger sessions, you will find, yes, yes, we can. But we're going to get into more important things in just a minute. We're going to have Ari Berman. We're going to talk about General Michael Hayden. We're going to talk a little bit about Rove. I want to know a little bit more about this guy, Neil Volz, the chief of staff of Representative Bob Ney out of Ohio, to see how many people are implicated in that. So we're going to get to the bottom of some news in just a second with our guest, Ari Berman. Patton Oswalt later in the show, Michael Pollan, Svetlana, Mort Mortensen apparently is coming.
Hmm.
There's that. Is
mm-hmm.
that the album? This guy who plays violin is awesome. Back in a second, Ari Berman.
Back to a guy who's powerless to change the verdict of history, Mark Maron.
Is that a recovery tenet? I'm powerless to change it. Is that from the 12-step book that I don't have?
I either read it about somebody's bio or in Mein Kampf.
In Mein Kampf. Did you were in my garage today looking through my books.
Yeah.
I come home and you and Bill are busy recording something. There's Mein Kampf on the desk. And I'm like, Jim!
Hey, I've never seen a signed version before.
Oh, that's a rare thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family knew Hitler. They were, you know.
My uncle met Hitler. Did I tell you that?
No, let's hold it. Sure. Hold that. Let's keep that as a tease.
He did. He was on vacation, met Hitler, but we'll keep that as a tease.
I think we should wait for Patton to discuss that.
Okay.
Hey, folks, what happened in the news today? We don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed, so here's tonight's Mark Maron Show Short Order News. According to a new report, America's survival rate for newborn babies ranks near the bottom among modern nations. See, said Bush administration spokesperson, why bother with legal abortions if the kids are just going to croak anyway? It's a win-win. A full-time stay-at-home mother would earn $134,121 a year if paid for all her work, according to a study released Wednesday. And the annual pay for the husband who has to hear that every day? Priceless. New research indicates the brains of lesbians react similarly to those of heterosexual men. When exposed to female pheromones, the lesbians said the male subjects were pigs who could never really understand the pheromone, while the men countered the pheromone who encountered the pheromone was just going through a... Man, that joke! Why doesn't somebody edit this before I look at that? I've got to read it on the air!
You're the editor.
Why does someone take a look at this? When exposed to female pheromones, the lesbians said the male subjects were pigs who could never really understand the pheromone, while the men countered that the pheromone was just going through a phase and should come over to watch DVDs. And that's Mark Maron Show Short Order News, first version. And I like that joke so much, and I butchered it. But let's get to the news. Really, the real news. Ari Berman is on the Washington Beat for The Nation magazine. He is also a contributor to their breaking news blog, The Notion. He's here with us now to crunch some news. How are you, Ari Berman?
Good to be here. How are you?
Well, aside from screwing up a joke, I'm all right. So let's start with the CIA. Porter Goss's coerced resignation as head of the CIA is obviously a political victory for National Intelligence Chief John Negroponte. But what does it mean for the future of the CIA and the future of intelligence gathering?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, they're saying that Michael Hayden will in some ways be the person that they're trying to replace Porter Goss with, will challenge Rumsfeld, and in a way will be more independent at the CIA than Goss was. At the other hand, you know, there's a lot of unknowns about Hayden. He, of course, ran the warrantless wiretapping program at the NSA, so he's not too popular right now. It's a little too soon to tell what's going to happen at the CIA. I think people are still perplexed as to why Goss left in the first place.
Well, okay, before we get to that, I mean, I was under the impression that there was at one time somewhat of a political dispute between Rumsfeld and Negroponte about money, because the DIA gets a lot of money, gets most of the intelligence money. So you're sort of supporting something that I hadn't thought of, or maybe this was actually a political move on Negroponte's part to counter Rumsfeld and to get more money into his operation.
Absolutely. I think everyone is spinning it like it's a political victory for Negroponte and not for Rumsfeld. The point after 9/11 to get this DNI director of national intelligence for Negroponte was that they would control all the intelligence. That has been slow going. They've hired all these people, but hasn't really done anything. Negroponte wants his man in the CIA, I think, to sort of facilitate that process.
So this isn't Rumsfeld's man. This is Negroponte's man.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, now let's talk about Goss. It seems to me that it'd be impossible not to tie this to the third in command who announced his retirement, this guy, Dusty Fogo, who was implicated in Hookergate. Do you think that was the primary propulsion of Goss's resignation?
I don't know, but it's certainly an intriguing one. I think that the Bush administration is trying to keep the word hookers out of the newspaper as much as they can, not just because George W. Bush is a religious Christian, but because this is a scandal, Hookergate, that seems to combine all the scandals of years past into one. We have the Watergate Hotel, we have bribes, we have members of Congress, we have defense contractors, we have cigars, although they're not being used in the typical Clintonian fashion.
No, they're actually using their other things to do that, apparently.
Different oral usage. But what's happening is that these two defense contractors who bribed Duke Cunningham had these suites at the Watergate Hotel and another hotel in Washington, and they'd bring members of Congress and other people, including Dusty Fogo, the number three guy at the CIA, including another person nicknamed Nine Fingers, who worked for Goss. You literally can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
Who worked for Goss. And they think prostitutes may have been involved. They're not sure. Goss claims he wasn't at the parties, but clearly people he knew very well were, and it's still uncertain. Goss may have been there. So I think that you need to keep this in mind when you look at why Goss was forced out. It certainly seems convenient that he would leave at a time when this scandal is just sort of breaking open.
And obviously the issue is not, you know, whether they used prostitutes or played poker. It's the fact that they were there to be sort of wined and dined and seduced into doing the bidding of Wilkes and the other guy.
Absolutely. Wilkes and Mitchell Wade.
Mitchell Wade,
who's
yeah.
already pled guilty and is going to jail. And it's unknown. Wilkes has not been charged yet, but it looks like he hasn't been charged in the first Cunningham scandal because they're looking to charge him in this much bigger one. And the reason why Duke Cunningham wore a wire, I think, is now becoming more clear. It was a much larger scandal. In terms of what's happening specifically with the defense contractors, we're still learning this out. I mean, they may have gotten contracts with the CIA, for example. They may have used Goss's office to get contracts with the CIA. We know they got a lot of contracts from Cunningham's Defense Appropriations Committee in the House. So, yeah, it's not just about prostitutes. It's about influence peddling through prostitutes.
Absolutely.
And poker and everything else.
So now this is, to me, this is great stuff. Now, there is suggestion now that there are other members of Congress involved in Hookergate, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we know for sure that Bob Ney's time is up. I mean, with Neil Volz as chief of staff pleading guilty to conspiracy, and with Rudy and Scanlon and Kadan, DeLay's old crew, also saying that he was involved, how the hell is Bob Ney even denying? When's this going to crumble on him?
Well, very soon. The statute of limitations in the really specific case where Ney helped Jack Abramoff buy a fleet of cruise ships in Florida expired. People thought he might get indicted then. They clearly are trying to get a bigger case against him. We don't know in terms of the time frame on this stuff, but Ney's lawyer has said probably in a month or two they're going to know, and it's almost definite that he'll get indicted.
So what do you hear about...
Put it this way. It would be surprising to me and a lot of other people if he doesn't get indicted.
I don't see how he can't. I mean, with Volz being as vocal as he is... And
that, of course, is not Hookergate.
No, that is not Hookergate. That is Indian Gate. That is Abramoff land,
exactly.
Jack and the Indians. And I heard yesterday or the day before that DeLay, it looks like he's definitely, you know, at least going to be... I think he's going to be... convicted of conspiracy, do you?
Down in Texas?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone knows. Where did you hear that from?
Well, what I heard was that it's become clear that the money, the dealings around the money, that he dealt with Abramoff directly, that his office dealt with Abramoff directly and not one of the Avesi groups.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that would imply to me that that's not even a very long stone's throw away from actually being indicted on conspiracy.
Yeah, in the Washington case. I think that's separate from the money laundering case in Texas that Ronnie Earle is charging him with.
Right.
But yeah, why do you get all these DeLay aides if you don't go after Tom DeLay? It doesn't make sense. I think he's still under the gun in this Abramoff investigation, which, by the way, back in January, there was a lot of talk of all these indictments. The DOJ is either amassing a very strong case against a lot of people or is stalling or doesn't have the goods on people we thought they did. I mean, I remember when this scandal broke, Abramoff pled guilty, people were saying there was a dozen members of Congress involved. It seems to have narrowed, so it's unclear who exactly, besides Tom DeLay, besides Bob Ney, is actually in legal trouble right now.
Okay, so let's move from Abramoff and move from Hookergate, and let's move over to Plaingate and talk about the impending indictment of Karl Rove. I mean, we've been hearing that this is going to happen any day now for months.
Yeah, but no one knows how Patrick Fitzgerald operates, and anyone who says with certainty that someone's going to be indicted by Fitzgerald doesn't know what they're talking about. I think it's too soon to tell. The signs are not good for Rove, obviously. His lawyer has been talking to more and more people. They seem to think they may get indicted, but it's still unclear.
Okay, well, it was great talking to you, Ari. Hope we can do this again.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for clearing some stuff up for me. That right there, isn't that amazing? It's like I never really thought about it so clearly until right now. Three major corruption scandals and the GOP. Three. You got Plaingate, you got Hookergate, and you've got the Abramoff deal, and that is separate from the case against Tom DeLay for money laundering, campaign money, in Texas.
I hope it just doesn't end, you know, before we can enjoy all this.
It's been such a tease. We'll be back with Patton Oswalt, Michael Pollan, Mort Mortensen, Svetlana, you bunch of stuff.
Now, side effects may include bloating. Mark Maron.
Thank you. I just inhaled an entire Middle Eastern platter of some kind. Chicken shawarmas, falafels, potatoes, tahini.
Hello, bloating.
Hummus and raita. I don't know what raita was doing there. Is it yogurt sauce? Isn't that the same as the Indian yoga sauce? Yogurt sauce, raita?
Yeah, that's Indian, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but there's there was a little of that. Oh, you know what it is? It's Greek. It's the Greek version. It's not the Indian one. It's the Greek one. Man, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Well, you know,
that would have screwed me up for hours.
Get some bloggers on there.
Figured out where the hell that came from. Yeah, bloggers, you people at markmaron.com, let's get some emails going.
I would think our next guest.
Because, what?
Would know about that.
Yeah, he knows. Patton knows everything. And if he doesn't, he'll make you believe that he does.
Yep.
Hold on, I'm going to introduce you.
Oh, sorry.
I think I'm going to take this from the angle. I'm going to play the resentful interviewer who is jealous of everything you do.
Well, oh, okay.
Again?
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, this guy Patton, you know, I knew him when he was just starting out. He wasn't really that funny. And I met him up in San Francisco. And then for some reason, you know, he gets famous, you know? You've probably seen him on Comedy Central, HBO, or on the commercial where his kilt blows up. Which one?
That was Sierra Mist.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's really the best stuff you've done.
It really is. Yeah. Well, it's the closest to who I am. That was the most personal.
Yeah, you can tell in your face, it, like, finally.
I had the courage to show people who I was.
He's on the King of Queens every week or every other week, or how does that work?
Pretty much every other week.
Every other week? That must be good money. That must be some good money, huh? You're going to be making money off of that for a long time.
You know, you're like the alcoholic uncle that comes up to you at the family reunion and is like, hey, what are you drinking? It's like, vodka tonic. Yeah. Oh, I bet that's good.
I bet that's great.
That's real good.
I used to love those. Yeah, well, you enjoy that because everything's going good for you now. Now, who the hell knows what's going to happen in the future?
That is true.
He has a DVD.
Maybe a spinoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a DVD out. You got a new CD that you're asking people to order on your website pre-release?
No. I'm working on the new CD, but I'm not pre-ordering yet.
I saw a thing on your website that said pre-order it now. Are you sure?
Oh, pre-order the DVD.
Oh, that's not out yet?
No, the DVD is out.
So why are people pre-ordering if they can't?
Probably because I'm lazy and I didn't tell my webmaster to change that.
There you go.
An idiot.
Does your webmaster live with you?
No.
Hey, dude. Dude, get up, man. We just changed everything.
Hey, it's 3:30 in the afternoon. Could you listen? Don't even need to get out of bed. Just bring your laptop over. Listen, I'll spell it out for you.
He's a comedian of comedy. Patton Oswalt's here. I was still in the intro. I was still working through the intro. Wasn't that amazing?
But I liked how it petered out.
We did half the interview.
He's a comedian of Patton Oswalt.
Yeah. So what the hell have you been doing? Why are you here? Did I ask you to come?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry. That's rude. I'm the
host.
You
asked me to come a few weeks ago, and I had to blow you off. And I remember I could tell by your emails, you were very, very pissed at me.
I was getting curt because I think you told me like hours before. You like, oh, I thought you meant tomorrow today.
Yeah, no, I was, I flaked. I flaked and freaked out.
You did?
Yeah, because
what does that look like for you, flaking and freaking out? Do you run around going,
No, I get really still.
Yeah.
And I get really quiet and really short with people. And I'm like, hey, something wrong? No, fine.
And then
fine.
Do you need to nap? Okay. Do you internalize everything and get exhausted or no?
What happens is I then get so tense, but I don't get anything done.
Yeah.
And then all that energy, I need to take a nap.
All right,
doing nothing.
Well, let's be honest about this, about your work ethic, because I'm curious. Because I can't seem to really get much of anything done.
Yeah.
But you're not on MySpace, right?
I am on MySpace.
Somebody just got me onto that.
Yeah.
That is a ridiculous. If you're a narcissistic, insecure person.
Oh, it's the worst.
Because you're just sitting around going, how come whose friend is that? Maybe I should ask them to be my friend. How many friends do they have?
Oh, I know.
And you look at other people's friends?
Yeah, and also you look at people's comments, and you look at how come I'm not in their top eight. And then, you know, like, if you
there's a ranking thing?
Yeah, they do a ranking thing on other people's websites, like who's in their top eight, like who they like the best, and.
What do you got to do to facilitate this? I didn't put anything on mine. They were like, who do you want to meet? I said the usual freaks, and I put my website.
You know, I hate to say this, but if you want a lot of hits, you got to do a lot of work on MySpace. You got to bells and whistles, videos, stuff like that.
Do you have? You've hired somebody. Your web guy does your MySpace, doesn't he?
No, I do.
Come on, be honest with me.
No, my web guy does my website.
Yeah,
and that costs enough money, so I can't put any more money into my narcissism and ego. I just do the MySpace page myself.
You're just gonna let it make money.
I'm gonna. No one has ever made money off MySpace, and no one ever will.
Really?
I don't think so.
Except for the guys that just sold it for $500 million.
Oh, yeah. The guys that invented it.
Yeah.
Those pretty much.
So where were you? What have you been doing? How come you blew me off for a week and a half?
I was getting ready to go on a tour that then, at the last minute, I got offers to do things in movies that would finance the tour, so I had to say yes to them, and that's why I had to blow you off.
Well, that's difficult to have to say yes to movies. Man, that must hurt a little bit.
I needed the money. I flat out needed the money to pay for the tour.
Sure, I'll work
did.
In a movie.
Oh,
God, what were the movies? Come on.
It was one movie called the working title is More Than Puppy Love 2.
Really?
Yeah, but
are you
serious? I got to be with a lot of puppies and Peter Boyle. That was cute.
Peter Boyle and puppies and Patton.
And then I'm going out to Kansas City to do more of that later this month.
Another movie with dogs?
No. Like more stuff of that movie.
Oh, it's not too different.
And then there was some stuff in Reno 911, that movie that I did. And
And
then two things I did for Comedy Central: a hosting gig and a thing where I went to a movie. Movie set and talk to people, and I needed that money so I could finance my tour.
That's really good.
Isn't that nice?
Sorry, I'm just finishing up my tea.
Is that your new yawn? The slurping of the tea.
It's my new hook. I'm doing this on stage too,
Mark.
Right, people?
You want to be in movies, Mark?
Huh?
Do you want to be in movies?
Dude, I was in a movie. I had a very powerful 45 seconds and almost famous.
Really?
Hold on, watch. Lock the gates! I'm famous for that. Man, I go into places and then people are going, lock the gates! That's the lock the gates guy. After I explained to him who I was in the movie.
And
it doesn't just happen.
That's really you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is him.
Yeah, and I really had to dig deep for
and
that.
Do you have an action scene because you're driving a cart and chasing a bus?
Oh, that was a sad.
Remember that?
That was a sad moment of
a little arms waving
I was chasing the bus, and in the director's cut, there's more of me. But the weird thing about that moment was, I had probably told you about this before, is those things are shot. When the director goes home, they're like, the second crew's coming in, Mark.
Exactly,
see you later, Cameron. And it's just me and three other guys driving up and down this ramp at the L.A. Coliseum for 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So the comedians, Let's talk about your successful. good. No cough button. Just use your hand.
I know. There's no cough button.
I know. You wouldn't have used it anyways. Don't
lie
to me.
Yeah, it's true.
So what is bothering you?
Actually, right now, nothing's bothering me. I'm very excited.
Yeah? About
because
what?
I'm excited about Hookergate.
Yeah.
Here's why.
Okay.
Because it's a story that has the word hooker in it.
Yeah.
Fox News, there's no way they can resist running with a story that has the word hooker in it.
Right.
Because they're addicted to ratings. And even though they're a House, basically a Republican House organ, it's going to be really cool to see the tension of them trying to spin it positively, but they have to say hooker all the time in connection with Republicans.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, I think, to see that tension these next few, don't you think?
They'll start setting it up in a weird way, like, you know, not all hookers are bad people. A lot of them are
exactly.
They're good people, they're parents. Some of them are single moms that are in trouble.
Working moms, and the Republicans are trying. What are the Democrats doing for the single moms out there?
Yeah,
nothing.
I mean, I think hooker is just a negative word. I think sex industry worker is another way to put it. And do they get health coverage? No, they don't. And the Democrats are doing nothing about this issue.
No, they condemn and they have no solutions.
If they get a bigger name in on Hookergate, then it will, like we were talking about on the break, why hasn't it infused itself into the broader culture? That there is a culture of corruption in Washington that has to do with fairly esoteric characters to a lot of America. That, you know, most Americans would be hard pressed to even identify who the hell Porter Goss is.
Right.
I would even say that Tom DeLay is somebody that a lot of Americans don't know. So until a big fish goes down, someone they can identify, then it's really going to pick up some traction in the culture.
Yeah, two-thirds of the people don't even know where Iraq is on a map, so they don't care about it.
Yeah, but I mean, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I actually know where Iraq is.
Really?
I actually know where it is.
Because you were there.
I was never there, but I actually know where it is.
When you were a kid, though, let's be honest about this. Because, you know, I don't know if when I was in high school I would have been able to find it. I can find it now with no problem, with ease.
Right.
Yeah, I can name a lot of the states and countries, okay? So
that was actually disingenuous because I didn't really get aware politically until I was in college. I was so aggressively unaware of everything.
Except what?
Beyond trying to get laid. Really, that was it. It started and ended there.
How'd that work out?
You know, it'll happen. Yeah. I'm patient. It's going to happen.
You're married. I hope it happens soon.
I'm married. I mean, right now, things are looking pretty good.
Any day now.
The over-under on me in Vegas is really good right now.
She's dangling in front of me. So, but let me just, let's just get to the bottom of it, though. I seem to be saying that a lot. Bottom line, get to the bottom of it. Little Patton Oswalt is kind of bopping his way down the halls in high school. What kind of reaction is he getting from? Yeah. Bopping, is that a word? I was going to say plodding.
Yeah. I had my collar turned up and my sleeves rolled up.
Who'd you say hi to? Who were you afraid of? Were you a magnanimous kind of like everybody likes me kind of guy? Or were you?
I was friendly.
Were you isolated with the other people? Like, who was your best friend?
No,
in high school?
I was one of those skaters, you know, that was kind of like in between all the cliques.
Yeah, me
never
too.
Really belonged to a clique.
I think a lot of comics are like that.
Yeah.
Except for the asses.
Right, exactly. Except for the true geniuses that actually said no one ever talked to me, but that's, you know.
Yeah.
Who wants that for memories?
Did you have that weird skill where you could mock jocks right to their face and they'd still like you? Wasn't that the greatest thing?
Yeah, they love that.
Yeah, because they're retarded, a lot of them. But
look, they're just happy that they're hearing their name. They just hear blah, 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 their name.
Yeah.
They're just
and
happy.
They turn around in their dumb letter jackets.
Right.
To this day, if I see a kid in a letter jacket, some part of me is like, be cool. Just be cool.
Don't be mean to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't know.
Then you're just like an old guy to them now. They don't care.
Yeah.
No, you still appeal to kids. Good for you.
I still appeal to kids?
Yeah. You've got a lot of youngsters.
Are you running Decca Records? This guy, he still appeals to the kids.
I'm telling you. With this bit, he's going right to the top.
Let's get his face on some wax.
What, are you kidding me? I can see the cover already. Patton sings to kids.
Call Teen Beat and Dynamite. We're going to do some features on this guy in time for summer. Get him on that Sid and Marty Krofft tour.
Call Dick Clark now. tell him what he's gone. We'll get Patton on.
I was saying this the other night. I know this sounds so naive. What is it going to take before Bush has to resign? I mean, Nixon had to resign because what? He broke into an office, put some bugs in the office, and then lied about it. That's it. So at this point, what more does Bush have to do?
I'll tell you what has to happen, honestly.
What?
I've got the answer, and you know what? We'll talk about it right after the break.
Oh, okay.
Here on the Mark Maron Show.
Have you ever wondered what happened to the guy who invented light beer? Well, he's dead. That's Mort Mortensen's Weekly Remembrance coming up next.
Now
how his psyche is divided into six parts. Mark Maron.
Oh, that's one of those cryptic ones. Now, how can I'm going to stop responding to those things. Other people who have shows and their guy says things in introductions, they don't go, "Hey, really?
What are you doing? What am I living in your basement or something?"
Kind of. You were in my garage this morning making a recording of something.
And
reading Mein Kampf. Let's not forget this morning, Jim.
That was memories.
Hey, we got Patton Oswalt here, and in just a minute, let's do it now because he looks like he's on his way in. Every week, we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance.
Oh,
you all right?
Yeah, all right, man.
Okay.
Alan Kaprow, expressionist artist. Alan Kaprow, the 60s artist who broke new ground in expression by staging events he dubbed happenings, is now expressing himself by not happening at all. Kaprow's body was found sprawled on a canvas stained with two overturned cans of acrylic paint and paw prints from his basset hound Grover. Friends called it his greatest work.
Oh, no.
One of Kaprow's best-known pieces was Yard, consisting of a jumble of spare tires heaped in a small room open to foot traffic. This was quickly followed up by, "What the hell is my son doing with his life?" consisting of his mother standing in a small room open to foot traffic yelling, "What the hell is my son doing with his life?"
You alright?
Yeah, I got something in my eyes.
Yeah, I know. It's the allergy.
The deceased requested his remains be left in a phone booth with a paper bag and a turnip.
It's appropriate.
It's very expressionistic.
It's fitting for that guy.
Bruce Peterson, the real $6 million man. Bruce Peterson, the former NASA test pilot whose spectacular crash and subsequent recovery inspired the 1970s TV series $6 Million Man, is now $2 worth of dust. He's now starring in his own episode of 6 Feet Under.
Okay, yeah.
He's now lying in a $6 coffin.
Yeah.
I didn't know which one to pick for that.
I'm glad you went with all of them.
Yeah. They all worked.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You can be all right?
Yeah. You have a tissue?
Yeah, I have one. Here you go.
Thanks.
That sounded messy.
Oh. Peterson apparently died of heart failure after having to endure 30 years of phone calls from a confused Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah,
it happens.
Yeah.
She's very confused. Yeah. Peterson crashed. He crashed in the M2-F2, a wingless lifting body aircraft that led to the development of the space shuttle, a winged lifting body aircraft that led to the development of an endless series of tasteless Challenger jokes.
Yeah.
A long way to get to that.
Yeah, I got lost in the middle.
Yeah.
It's okay, though.
Yeah. Actual film footage of Peterson's famous crash was seen in the opening credits of the TV series, followed by the now classic line, "Whoops, wrong button." Peterson is survived by his two children and the wreckage of Lee Majors' career. This has been the Weekly Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, "Who's chopping onions?"
Thank you, Mort.
Oh, Mort.
There you go.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah, it's touching every week. We have to fight back the tears. Patton Oswalt.
Rock, man.
Yeah.
He gets put through it every week.
Every week. Got to filter through all the dead people and try to make it respectable.
Yeah.
I find that character... Oh, man.
Come on. Roll with it, man.
I find the character of Mort.
Yeah. Look, Catalina... Patton and I are going to be on Catalina Island with Paul Gilmartin doing Richard Martin.
I love Catalina Island.
You do?
I love it, yeah.
Huh.
The way you just said that, I just pictured us just on an island. No
yeah,
one
just me and you.
The three of us are going to be on the island.
It's very romantic.
Just
it
me
is.
Pestering you. So, like, how many people come out to those shows? Just never-ending questions. Like, all right, so when you guys go out on the bus, like, who pays for that?
Yeah, I mean, how much money, is there a guarantee?
Yeah.
Leave me alone!
Yeah, this is never ending.
Yeah.
So, does Kevin James need a new friend?
I don't know. Does he need a new friend?
Thinking of a new series? Because that could be really, you know.
I could be good at that, man. I could
kooky
be...
liberal nutbag friend. What do you think, man?
I am pitching that. The kooky, no.
Kooky liberal nutbag.
So wait, tell us about, to answer your question, the only way that Bush can honestly go down is if the Democrats win back the House in the midterms, which they can. They only need 15. There's about 40 up for grabs. And if they don't, they should, it's useless. It'd be game over.
We're done.
But the only way they can facilitate a real investigation is going to be if they can get a majority.
Okay.
And John Conyers can have his way, and they can.
So you're saying it doesn't matter up until November how much the American public turns against this guy until we get the House and Senate back, it's all moot.
Not unless something that Jim feels is possible happens, which is that people get so pissed off they actually go, you know, enough of them go out into the streets and demand some sort of justice. But really, when it comes right, when was the last time someone ran into your house and go, "Let's go, we're going to take him down, we're taking Washington back"?
And you're right.
Like, I'm meeting with my web guy in an hour.
Yeah.
The new CD's coming out.
I've got a Skittles audition.
Yeah,
you know, it's way out in Venice. I got it's such a long, it's at 4, but I got it's 2. I got to leave now. There's gonna be all traffic.
I have to wear a spacesuit.
What you need is a MySpace for impeachment. Maybe
somebody
should work on that, huh?
Yeah, oh, you could do that. Then the great thing, like here's a great example. The people in power in these bureaucracies, they don't care. They just say whatever they can, and they get away with everything. They've already gotten away with so much.
Right.
I don't even think Karl Rove has got a spin on the midterms that's going to enable the Republicans any sort of edge. I mean, if the Democrats screw this up.
I'm going libertarian. I'm done.
So tell us about when your family met Hitler.
Oh yeah. I want to hear this.
My Uncle Bill, who lived until 95 years of age.
All right.
Recently. He was on vacation in Germany in 1928, like a lot of people were back then, enjoying themselves. And he was with his college roommate. They went to Stanford, and his college roommate had relatives in Germany. And so they went up there to Berlin, and apparently they met von Hindenburg, who hugged them and said, "Hey, I'm sorry about the war," which he kind of said that. He said, "Hey, I'm sorry about your relatives dying in the war." And then this big, he got out of this limo, and there was this mustachioed guy in the back, you know, it was Hitler. And he introduced Hitler to my Uncle Bill. And he said, "Herr Hitler, this is Bill Earl and so-and-so. And he, the only thing he did was go,
And your uncle immediately said, "Hey, I don't like them either, the Jews."
So Hitler was hanging out with Hindenburg?
Yeah, he was in the back of this limo with Hindenburg.
Was he the chancellor at that time? Or
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, that was before Hitler took over.
Hitler was
fully.
What they call a comer.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's just tooling around in this car.
Yeah.
Here's how this conversation gets ruined. Excuse me, but I'm Jewish.
We'll
be back
so
in a second.
And now, Jumbo Shrimp, Mark Maron.
He's getting paid for those.
Nice.
Isn't that great? Jumbo shrimp.
I created an atmosphere. I don't necessarily make sense.
That's true. That's the genius of you.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. Patton's still with us. Patton Oswalt here. Jim Earle's here. And as you know, here on the show, there's an ongoing discussion between Jim and I about food. Jim, of course, is a vegetarian of the self-righteous variety. I am a compulsive eater of the Jewish variety, but fairly health conscious. Mm. Our guest has investigated what we eat, why we eat it, and what damage we do to ourselves, the environment, and even the security of the country. The security of the country without knowing it.
Wow.
The book is The Omnivore's Dilemma. The author is Michael Pollan. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
Thanks. Good to be here, Mark.
It's great. So now let's Jim, my partner here, is an extreme vegetarian. I am a guy who just likes to eat well. What exactly are you challenging people to do with this book?
Basically, to think about their food. You know, I'm not a vegetarian. I really am an omnivore. I eat all different kinds of things.
You killed a pig at the end of the book.
I killed a wild boar and ate it, and killed some chickens, and several animals died in the making of the book.
We'll get to that. Let's close with
but
that.
But I have to say, I've got enormous respect for vegetarians, just because at least they're thinking about what they're doing when they eat. And that's more than you can say for most of us.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Now, I try to eat well. I know what's healthy. I try to buy the right foods. I try not to eat too many bad ones. Is that really the omnivore's dilemma? Is that, I guess the premise is that most other animals don't even think about what they eat. They're programmed to eat what they eat.
Yeah, and you know what? Most other people who you know, have a kind of stable culture of food around them also don't have to think that much about what to eat.
But that doesn't mean it's...
What they learn from their parents is, constitutes good food. For some reason in this country, we have to reinvent our diet every couple years. You know, we're kind of buffeted by the latest science and the latest food marketing and trends and diets and fads. And so we're deeply confused about what is, you know, fundamentally a very simple and basic matter.
Well, what made you write this book? Did you have a catharsis? Did you get hit in the head with something and just say, oh, my God, something's got to give?
Well, because I was starting to feel confused myself what to eat. I mean, if you read the newspaper and, you read about mad cow disease and various foodborne illnesses and the way animals are treated in confinement and, should you be eating trans fats or omega-3 fats?
Bread. How about bread?
It gets confusing, and I wanted to answer that question for myself. And I realized I couldn't really figure out what to eat till I asked this question, which is, what the hell am I eating? And I realized I didn't know. I mean, you pick up a Twinkie, and you read those ingredients and try to figure out what that is. It's not exactly a cake.
It's all,
about
50
ingredients,
some
of which are things like beef and many long scientific compound
explosive materials too, as
nouns.
Well,
and well, that's in a, you can get some butane in a chicken McNugget. So you know, as a journalist, I decided, well, I needed to do a little food detective work before I could figure out what to eat. I better figure out what I am eating, and so I followed an industrial meal, a McDonald's meal, back to the source.
Well, let's get into it then. So, what did you find out?
Well, the surprising thing to me was, whatever I followed, if I was following the soda or the beef or the cheese or the rolls, I ended up in pretty much the same place, which is to say a cornfield in the American Middle West.
Really?
The great edifice of variety and choice, supposedly, in the American supermarket or fast food outlet, is all made out of corn and its partner in the fields, the soybean. We basically take those two simple crops, and we break them down and put them back together again as processed foods, or we feed them to animals and turn it into animal protein. And we're eating corn at McDonald's. That, you know, the soda is all corn in the form of high fructose corn syrup. The burger is corn-fed meat. The chicken nugget is corn upon corn upon corn. All
really?
Those ingredients are corn-based, from the ascorbic acid to the corn starch that holds the thing together to the chicken itself, to the attractive golden coloring, you name it, it's corn.
And is that because corn is cheap? Is it because it can't be healthy?
Well, it's never healthy to eat too much of one thing. I mean, you know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, the Irish got a wake-up call on that in the 1840s. You know, they were the people of the potato the way we're the people of corn. And one day, literally, it was over a course of a couple of days in 1845, a fungus disease wiped out the potato crop, and a million Irish starved to death. So, you know, I don't know that that's going to happen to us. We're not quite as reliant as they are on one crop, and we have pesticides and things. But nevertheless, it's a dangerous way to eat. And, you know, we're omnivores in that we need to eat about 40 or 50 different nutrients to be healthy. And you're not getting all those from a diet of processed corn.
Well, let's talk to my friend Jim here. Let's talk about the environmental liabilities of using so much corn and how, because we've had conversations here about meat production, about methane, and how damaging that is to the atmospheric balance. But when I was reading your book, it's amazing that producing corn is completely it's environmentally bad.
Well, you know, we've taken this wonderful plant. I mean, I've got nothing against corn. It's a great food. But we've changed it a lot. And we've taken essentially what was a solar system for converting, as most plants do, solar energy into, edible carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And we've turned it into a fossil fuel guzzler. Corn is the SUV of plants at this point, because to grow so much corn, and we grow 10 billion bushels of this stuff every year in this country, far more than we need, you have to give it huge quantities of synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, which is made from natural gas. You use diesel to, harvest it and plant it. You, in processing it to turn it into high fructose corn syrup, you use vast quantities of more fossil fuel. And then you drive it all over the country because we have this nationalized food system. So the environmental footprint of that corn-based food system is deep and wide. And, in fact, to grow food the way we're growing it in this industrial way based on a couple crops like corn is using 20% of all the fossil fuel we're consuming. That's more than we use to drive ourselves around. So we don't often think of food as being part of the energy problem, but it's a tremendous part of the energy issue and the global warming issue.
Well, isn't that most of that spurred on by the high meat-based diet that we have in America?
No question, that's a big part of it. To raise a steer to slaughter weight in this country takes nearly 100 gallons of oil. Most of it coming in all the corn.
So much water as well.
And huge and amounts pesticides. Of water, and then you have tremendous amounts of waste. Because when you take animals off of farms where they used to grow up and put them on feedlots, Wendell Berry's got a great line about this. You've taken a solution, which is to say you've got animals to provide manure for your crops and crops to feed your animals. You have this closed nutrient loop. You take that solution and you neatly divide it into two problems. One is pollution on the feedlot, because you've got nowhere to put all that manure. And the other is a fertility problem on the farm, which you have to remedy with more chemical fertilizers.
And
because
now
you don't have animals around.
And now they want to make they're going to make fuel out of corn at some
point.
Yeah,
that's the latest thing. You know, we're eating so much of it, we're stuffing ourselves with it, we're getting fat eating all this corn-based food, but we can't eat any more of it. So now they want to feed it to our cars.
Yeah. So
ethanol is the latest corn disposal scheme, and it makes no sense if you look at it. It takes 9/10 of a gallon of oil to make 1 gallon of ethanol. So really, you're not getting as much energy as it appears.
Okay, well, I don't want people to get the impression that your book is only a gloom and doom about our current state of food.
No,
and
to the contrary.
It's mostly
about solutions.
Yeah, it's a nice book. It's a pretty book. It's hardcover, and it's got a very nice cover. And it has a lot of solutions, and it actually has a lot of personal stories in it. So let's get into the solutions before we get too mired in the horror.
Well, I immediately went looking for alternatives to this industrial food, because it's clear that, you hear this word, that industrial food is unsustainable. Even Monsanto will tell you it's unsustainable, but largely to get you to buy their GMO crops.
Well, they're the guys that brought planned obsolescence to seeds, right?
Well, exactly, and genetically modified food.
Mm.
But what does that mean? It means that the system can't go on the way it is feeding us. It also means that it's not doing what a food system needs to do. It's not keeping the population healthy. We're getting unhealthy, even though we've got too much food, or because we have too much food. So I started looking at alternatives, and I spent a lot of time investigating organic food and tracing a meal that I bought at Whole Foods back to the source also.
And how'd that look?
I went to visit. Well, it's better. There's no question it's better. Growing food without chemicals and pesticides represents huge progress. The food is marginally more nutritious. The damage to the land and the water is minor compared to industrial food. But I also found that food on sale in Whole Foods is not quite what it's cracked up to be. I think a lot of us have an image when we buy organic that's really encouraged by the labeling.
Are you kidding me? I can go into a Whole Foods and not want to buy anything just to feel better.
Yeah, I know. Well, you feel virtuous.
Walking
down the aisles, you feel virtuous. You're reading about the cows and how nice they live in, grassy pastures and the fish that comes from small villages of Native Americans in Alaska. It's a pastoral fantasy.
Well, Michael Pollan, hold on a minute. I we're going to have to continue this conversation because we're getting to the good part where you kill a pig and you're going to tell me why Whole Foods is kind of creepy. So stay with us. Michael Pollan is with us. The book is The Omnivore's Dilemma. He'll be here tomorrow night in L.A. at the Los Angeles Public Library at 7 p.m. We'll continue talking to him in a minute.
And now he causes tumors in mice. Mark Maron.
I do. It's the only way I know how to get rid of them. And I'm not going to share this secret with anybody. Patton Oswalt has been sitting patiently learning about the fact that he's filled with corn. Michael Pollan is still on the phone. It is fascinating.
I had no idea.
We're going to continue the conversation, but you have to do something with your dog.
I got
to
go pick up my dog from doggy daycare.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. And you're going to be, now that gig's going to be over.
You're
going to be with me and Catalina June 6th.
No, June 10th.
June 10th.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's what they're telling you. So go to the KTLK.com and get the details on the big Catalina adventure with Mark and Patton. So get out of here and let me finish talking to Michael.
That didn't sound gay at all. Thanks. Bye.
See you later. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming. So, Michael Pollan, that was an awkward moment. You were overhearing our break talk.
Yeah, no, it was fascinating.
Yeah. The show within the show. I'm so glad it didn't get ugly. No, I like your book a lot. So now, okay, so I'm at Whole Foods, and I've always had this suspicion, Michael, that there, it's just too much of a good thing. It can't be legitimate. There's got to be some crap.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's illegitimate, but it's not exactly in keeping with the pastoral image. I mean, these days, organic has gotten so big that a lot of your organic milk is actually coming not from small farms where the cows live on grass, but from huge organic feedlots where 4,000 or 5,000 cows live together. They never go out to pasture. They eat corn. Once again, corn comes into
the
store.
And they're not even designed to eat corn.
And exactly. And corn makes a cow sick. I mean, corn, you know, the great thing about cows is they can digest something we can't digest, which is grass. And grass keeps them healthy, but we feed them corn because they grow more quickly and produce more milk.
And
corn is cheap.
And the bottom line is that a lot of the regular agribusiness operations allocate time or space on their fields for organic farming now.
That's right. And what you're finding is a lot of the big agricultural companies are getting into organic, which is basically a good thing. I mean, it's more land better taken care of, more farm workers who don't have to inhale pesticides, all this kind of stuff. But it's on a scale now that some compromises to the original organic ideals are bound to take place.
The small farm.
Essentially, they're building a parallel food system. We're moving toward the organic Twinkie. We already have the organic Oreo. And they want a whole parallel food system. And when I say they, that's really us. I mean, we're demanding this. We want strawberries 12 months of the year, tomatoes 12 months of the year. And so the organic industry is kind of bending the principles in order to give that to us.
And some organic farmers, are up in arms, and others, the ones that are succeeding in adapting to this type of market, are excited. But the guys that got into it in the 60s to serve a community, to focus on a particular type of farming and a type of production, think that it's bastardizing the whole ideal.
That's right. And a lot of them are getting out. They're moving on to what they call beyond organic, which is even higher standards. And that's what they should be doing. They should be raising the bar once again.
Were they just growing one tomato plant? A very special one?
Well, they're doing things like grass-fed beef, for example. I mean, you know, putting the animals back on grass, which is very good for the environment, very good for us. It's not required by the organic rules. The organic rules kind of missed grass as a key part of sustainable agriculture. So they're doing things like that, and they're figuring out ways to grow things in these very complex polycultures, they're called, where you know, you'll grow a couple different animals so that one is performing some ecological services for the other, and you get more food off the land, and you leave the land in better shape. So there's some very exciting things going on.
Yeah.
But industrial organic is an important part of the solution, but it's really only one way to go, and it doesn't solve all the problems. I mean, a lot of organic food is coming now from Mexico and China. And, you know, it's great to take care of land in Mexico and China, but it seems to me we should be taking care of the land here first.
Okay, so now let's get right down to the bottom line here, that these smaller kind of growers, these smaller farms, are doing something that is environmentally friendly. It's creating an omnivorous diet that is well-founded in at least respect for the land and for the animals and for the healthy human beings. But I think when it comes right down to it, is it affordable? Is it sustainable? And will this type of thing become readily available or spread across the country so it becomes the norm in any way?
Well, you know, I don't know if it'll become the norm, and I don't think we should look for one solution to our food problems. I think that is a fault. That's classic industrial monoculture thinking, that there's one way to do it. I think we better have 5 or 6 food chains out there, because when one of them fails, we still want to be able to eat. And so, you know, you got to keep organic going and some of these beyond organics, too. I think they're just going to be different food chains. There's one, there's a supermarket food chain that hopefully will be more and more organic. And, you know, even Walmart is getting into organics.
But they're bad for other reasons.
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. They're going to make it much more accessible, so it's not such an elitist food chain. But on the other hand, you know, they're very good at crushing their suppliers and driving down prices. So they're going to hurt a lot of farmers also.
And their employees. But, okay, so let's go.
Yeah. that, but I mean, that's another story. But on the other hand, if you want to support local farming, which is really this what this, I'm talking about here, you really have to leave the supermarket. You really have to shop in the farmer's market. And, you know, as wild a success as Whole Foods has been, so have farmers markets over the last few years. The number of farmers markets in this country has doubled in just 10 years.
I shop there.
And you know, as you know, the food there is incredibly high quality, very fresh,
fresh
which
very
is to say more nutritious,
yeah.
And it's not processed. It's a very low energy system. You know, the farmers aren't coming that far. The food is not microwavable. It doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you shop at the farmer's market, you become a different kind of eater.
Yeah.
You really leave the industrial food chain. And that's, you know, frankly, that's where we have to go. We have to start cooking again. We have to start eating real whole foods. And then we can put our food system back on a more sustainable footing.
It's so rare that I feel like I'm doing the right thing. Jim, you're about to say
Well, isn't that a nice feeling?
We got to go. Yeah, it is a great feeling.
I mean, there's so many areas in our life where we can't do the right thing. You know, our tax money goes to support things we find deplorable, and we can't stop supporting those things without going to jail.
The fact is,
if you think that the way we raise pigs or eggs in this country is deplorable, as I do, it's very easy to pull out and put your money somewhere else and support an alternative.
Thank you, Michael Pollan.
My pleasure. Good to be here, Mark.
You take care. If you want to read about him killing a pig, you got to read the book. We'll be back in a second.
Now he has a distorted sense of self, Mark Maron.
Who doesn't, though? Really? I mean, it's all relative
very
to your...
deep question.
It's all relative to your perception. I'm not playing any more games.
Yeah.
You know, I know exactly what's going on with me. I don't know exactly how I come off to other people, but I know I'm self-aware enough to know when I'm being an idiot. And there's some things I got to change, but let's not get into that. God, it didn't take much to get me spiraling into some weirdness. That guy, Michael Pollan.
Yeah, I want to ask him a couple more questions. You know, but, you know, Patton wanted to ask him when dessert was invented, I think he was going to...
He was on a roll, and he had some things that he wanted to talk about in his book,
yeah.
And it becomes difficult to figure out how to get in there edgewise. You can always say, Mark, I'm going to ask a question, or here's another approach to a guest. Hey, Michael, could you shut up for a second? I got to ask you something. But I'm not going to do that because I'm hosting the show. But you have no problem in alienating guests.
No. Alienate? They don't even know I'm here. How can I alienate them?
I'm trying to bring you in. I'm doing everything
okay.
I can to bring you out of your shell,
when
Jim.
Dessert was invented.
Well, what's interesting that he was talking about is that corn thing blows my mind. Because I always knew that they maneuvered things. But, like, if you read his book to see how much of this stuff is corn, like, I had some facts in front of me that literally there's, like, 35 different ingredients in like, a McNugget, and about 90 of them are corn, and that math doesn't even work out.
Heather and I are about to maybe buy a diesel that's powered on nothing but corn oil.
Good for you. Wow, you are a good person.
Shut up. That's all we can afford. You know, they're like $4,900. You put a kit in there.
Wait. Oh, you already have one car, so you're going to buy a kit
For her, you know, she needs to, you know.
I think it's a great idea. I think you should get one of them French fry cars, the ones that run on grease.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Any kind, type of cooking oil. You stick in there. You filter out old oil. You stick it in there.
You can drive to Chinese restaurants and say, hey, you guys done with your grease?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can be
or
out
or something back. Funnier, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, you guys done with your fat? Mr. Fat?
There you go.
Hey.
Yeah.
Michael Pollan's going to be at the Los Angeles Public Library downtown tomorrow night at 7 p.m. If you go to markmaron.com, you can hit his name and go to his website and then go to his schedule. It's a nice-looking book. I love books. Even if I don't read them, I like them.
Books are for your friends.
They are. And I you know, he made me feel good about, because I cook everything. Like, literally, I cook. And I shop at the farmer's market.
I still think we're headed for catastrophic environmental doom.
Well, maybe you ought to call my dad and ask him if Nostradamus was right. Maybe you guys should call my dad and sit around and be Mr. Pessimistic and try to have all the answers.
All we got to do is just change our way of eating, that's all. It's very simple.
Human beings are persistent. We will adapt to whatever comes, my friend. We will grow gills and scales. There'll be a time for the lizard people. Wake up, man.
Can I quote you?
Don't be
you?
So selfish. Yeah. Hey, it's very exciting to have our guest here. She has been here before. She is an old hand at entertaining. She is a working call girl, prostitute, hooker. Svetlana
What is all this talk about corn? Corn is food of gods. What is the problem?
There's too much. It comes in all different forms. They keep breaking it down.
Which is fantastic.
I guess.
It's a flexible food.
Oh, yeah, but if you process food too much, it's no good for you.
Whatever.
So what's going on? You were where? What happened?
I'm a little stuffed. Too much blow last weekend. A little stuffed up. But I had a fantastic time. I was in Coachella Music Festival.
Uh-huh.
And I had never been to something like this, Mark. I mean, for me, music festival is cassette deck, condoms, and bottle of vodka.
Yeah, sure.
But I was guest of Madonna. She's client.
Really?
Yes, client.
Yeah?
Her husband is Icy Bastard, but she's fantastic.
Yeah?
We flew in on her chopper. We had backstage passes. It was really exciting. I had no idea what to expect. I have to tell you, Mark, I'm not up to date on new music.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm not either.
Really? Yeah. Last great record I had was Butthole Surfers.
Wow.
Bootleg. Bootleg, actually. Yeah, sure, My cousin Vlad paid a lot of money for that one. So I'm a little ignorant of the program, but I had great time.
So I've never been to Coachella. I wanted to go, but I had to work. How is it like many stages? How does it work?
It's a pig orgy. It really is. I mean, you have 7 different stages and tents where you stand in excruciating heat with lots of fat boys in baseball caps, the occasional Filipino, and bad tattoos. It's very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
But I found good technique to get space. You light 4 cigarettes at one and burn people's buttocks.
So, just so they don't know. What's going on?
And
then you slip by.
When they see my wreck and everything is forgotten.
Uh-huh.
But let me tell you, most of the music was boring.
Like, really?
Yeah, there was one band, Franz Ferdinand. Now, the drummer is Klein, so I feel guilty saying this. But their melodies are lackluster.
So this was a business trip in a way.
I tried to. You have to keep safe face. I don't know if it's the right expression.
Kinda.
It's like PR.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I'm here for you. I support you even in this.
Well, I think safe face would mean that you're trying to make it so people don't think the wrong thing about you, or you did. Something.
I don't care what people say, so okay. I'm giving face, whatever you want. I feel like Franz Ferdinand needed accordion, maybe vibraphone.
Yeah.
You know, but they're good guys. They have decent hygiene. But everything under the tents, Mark, was a disaster. It's such a small space. There was a band named Wolf Parade, another one named Wolf Mother. When a band sounds ridiculous, I don't go.
Right.
Unless they are clients or I'm escorting someone.
Uh huh.
And I tried to see several bands in these tents and gave up. And there was this one guy, Gnarls Barkley. Have you heard of him? He has one fun hit on the radio.
Yeah.
I can't sing. But there's lots of black people on stage, so my companion Leroy was very happy.
Your companion. I didn't know you had a companion.
Well, he escorts me, does my makeup, you know, massage sometimes. But he's African-American.
Yeah.
But this Gnarls Barkley sounded like P-Funk.
Okay.
Remember P-Funk?
Sure, I like P-Funk.
I used to like Client.
Uh-huh.
Client.
All of them?
All 17 or so, yes. So usually together at the same time. It depends how big the space is.
Yeah.
But after I had a good time in the tent, but after I went back into the sun to the big stage. At this point, it was 3 p.m. My mascara was boiling.
Uh-huh.
It was boiling. Uh-huh. By 4 o'clock, I had taken off my skirt, my shirt, my underwear, and was walking around in a purple nighty I keep in my bag for emergency.
Oh, yeah, just in case.
Always have purple nighty.
Yeah.
Always. Purple is very good for different things. It's made of corn.
I'm writing that
made
down.
Made of corn.
Yeah,
did you know?
Corn, purple nighty.
Yes, corn, purple
always
nighty.
Have.
Diesel fueled.
Got it.
There was one guy on the big stage, Matisse, who you heard of him.
That's the Orthodox Jewish guy that sings reggae?
Yes, he's doing black music, blackhead doing black music. It was fantastic. Of course, when I first heard this guy, I'm thinking, brilliant gimmick, right?
Yeah.
But then as the crowd is standing there waiting for this guy to come on stage, I look around at thousands of people. It looks like KKK convention. In Iowa. Mark, in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
I swear to God.
Yeah.
And besides Leroy's, only 3 other black people there. Maybe some Jews in hiding. Maybe.
Oh, come on.
There are lots of Oriental type slots, but that's to be expected. They've been taking away my business since late 80s. Whores.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Of course.
The only reason they didn't storm Matisyahu, like the Cossacks on Kielbasa, is they thought he was Amish guy, you know, that accessorized.
Really?
Yeah, so I started to yell. I said, it's a Jew, just to see what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun, you know, it's fun wreaking havoc.
Yeah.
But they had no idea what I was talking about. It was like Chinese to them.
Uh-huh.
But it was fun, the little guy singing reggae, bouncing with his pails flying, you know, singing about Zion, sweating bullets. It was very fun to watch.
Now, you probably have a lot of Orthodox clients, no?
We do. It's legal. You know that, right?
In the religion.
In the religion, it's okay.
It's okay to have a hooker?
He's prostitute. It's okay as long as he's discreet.
You mean don't do it in front of your kids or your wife?
Don't do it in front of the 76 kids. It's,
right.
It's like an audience. It's like a big stadium.
Yeah.
With all these children.
Okay, so so you see him, he's sweating, and then
he's
what?
He's sweating. Well, after that, I stayed to stay at the big stage, and I saw Sigur Rós.
I have no idea who these people are.
They are Icelandic band, but they don't have the fashion style of Björk. They're very depressing, Mark.
Uh-huh.
It's good for a night of S&M and Seventh Seal.
Ah, a little Bergman feel to them?
Yeah,
depressing?
Very Berg. Uh-huh. Slit your wrists, you know, not an outdoor festival. I mean, American youths are depressed. Enough as it is. Give some happy music.
Uh-huh.
Soviet Army Choir, Sporadic Electric Shock, something fun.
Did they have any of that?
No.
Okay.
No. At one point, I went to head over to Sahara Dance Tent to see what was going on with the ravers. You know, Madonna, Paul Oakenfold, you heard of him?
Paul Oakenfield. Oakenfold.
You turned him to Jewish now, Oakenfold.
Oakenfield? I don't know Oakenfield.
Stan Oakenfield.
I don't know Oakenfold. I'm out of the loop.
Very ugly English guy, great DJ.
Okay.
Very bad taste, but that's no surprise. Lots of shirtless gay men. Now, you know, Mark, I have never had sex with gay men.
Well, that's because you're gay.
It's not a surprise, no. But I had little revelation in tent. Their sweat smells different.
It does?
It's like gay sweat is more fun.
Really?
It is. It's like they're having such a good time, these guys. No worries in the world. It's unbelievable. I'm telling you, these people are dancing next to each other. Erection is the size of Minsk. Nobody seems to mind. It's unbelievable. It's like a...
fun sweat.
Fun sweat. Uh-huh. Really fun sweat. Uh-huh. But 10 minutes of gay sweat is enough. Uh-huh. And at this point, I was so high in the 3 pot brownies I got from Digable Planets, I could hardly speak.
Yeah.
Strong stuff. It's Hesh from Lebanon, apparently. Oh, I mean, these hip-hop bands, they don't play games.
No, they're
they make pot brownies. It's
they mean business.
It's Vicodin.
Yeah.
You know, but
bam!
Not. Boom. Yeah. Uh-huh. Boom, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but I got to tell you, all in all, okay. I think the planners of this festival are idiots. I mean, it's so simple. Have the festival 1 month earlier, when it's not 6,000 degrees outside.
Yeah.
But Americans are masochists, right? Yeah. You pick hottest months of year in desert. You make poor, uneducated white children pay $4 for a bottle of water, stand for 10 hours a day in baking suns that throbs on them like a poorly produced pornographic film.
A poorly produced...
A little alliteration,
I guess. That was nice. A poorly produced pornographic... Have you done pornographic films?
I have, but only, like, we didn't film. We didn't have camera.
Uh-huh.
So we just pretended it was film. We made sound like that just for fun with my cousins. It's a good time.
With your cousins?
Yes, well, you have to keep it in the family. It keeps costs low.
But now, you know, I'm learning more than I ever thought I would about you. But I'm excited you were here.
Well, one day, Mark. It's just a matter of time.
Is it?
Yes, I hope. We'll talk to your wife. We'll see what happens.
Oh, my God. So you're going to get her involved, too?
Of course.
All right. Okay. I'm going to wait on that conversation. I'm not going to rush right into that one. But thank you for doing that. So maybe next week we'll do some movies?
Absolutely. I saw a bunch. I just saw Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible.
3.
Yeah, 3.
Yes, with the freak. With the psychotropic drug, man.
You saw it already?
Yeah, I did.
And it was good?
I left in middle.
You did? Why?
Because I look at him and he's possessed by Satan, this guy.
It's true now. I think it's really affected his appeal. We had him on the phone on the show yesterday.
You did?
Yes, he called. He's delusional. And I think that this whole jumping around crazy Scientology...
You know, I don't care about the jumping couch or you're in love, but this whole thing is antidepressant. What are you doing with schizophrenics?
Right.
What are you doing with people that have brain damage?
Oh, so you're saying that his stance on depression is disturbing because he doesn't take into consideration people that are really mentally ill.
Yes, of course. Yeah. But they don't know about it. Go take niacin. Go to some facility.
Right, right.
What are you talking about?
Exactly. And that's a guy who's sick in the head saying that.
Jen Elfman, come give you a massage. This makes you feel better.
Yeah, it might. Actually.
I mean, you're actually right. Probably cure probably is ADD.
Well, thank you, Svetlana. Thank you for joining us. We're going to, we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Okay. Jim?
Yes, sir.
I think we're getting tight, aren't we? I mean,
tight?
Yeah.
You
feel like
closer?
Yeah.
Damn, yeah.
All right, buddy.
Hell yeah.
So we're going to do the short order news.
Erection is the size of Minsk.
You see it?
Yeah. Depressed because you haven't heard anything funny yet? Well, me too. Well, all that's about to change, maybe, because Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next. And now, juice boxes. I love them. Mark Maron.
Okay. All right. All right, Jim.
Yeah?
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
You like juice boxes.
I don't have a lot of experience with juice boxes. You got to really have family members that have kids. You actually have a juice box.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I've never bought a juice box, and the only time I've ever come in contact with juice boxes is with my brother's kids or with someone else's kids, and I didn't know grown-ups really did the juice box thing. I remember soy milk used to come in those, and occasionally I'd get those in a soy milk. All that talk about soy... you got to be careful with the soy because you'll grow a vagina and boobs. Do you understand that?
Oh, I've heard that, yeah.
I mean...
I've heard that.
There's a lot of estrogen in it. That's funny. Yeah. You just you switch voices
right
like
there.
A girl voice. Like, yeah. Listen, as David Blaine was unconscious and having convulsions when he was rescued from his 8-foot aquarium. You know what?
You deserve
I don't care.
It. Yeah.
I don't care. Yeah. What does that guy do?
Nothing.
I mean, I think that if I focused, I could stand on top of a pole for a few days.
See, that's what pisses me off about New York. That's a New Yorker.
Yeah.
That guy.
No, come on. New York's all right. What's that got to do with anything? He's just a guy who's getting away with murder is what he's getting away with. Getting away with something. New York's a great city. Don't start knocking New York because you're bitter. Look at this. Chinese and U.S. agencies more than 300 pounds of cocaine smuggled from Colombia. China. That is welcome to capitalism. As soon as they move from communist to capitalism, come on in. Bring the cocaine in. People want to start staying up all night talking about their business, talking about the extra jack they have, talking about the girls getting the strip. China's changing, man. Look at this. Other narcotics are making inroads. Listen to this. 435% increase in drugs like, stay with me, people. We got methamphetamine, a little crank, a little ecstasy, ketamine. Welcome to the world of capitalism, Chinese folks. Hope you enjoy it.
Big country, a lot of opportunities.
Used to be all heroin, though. The opiates, you know, coming in through Hong Kong, Vietnam, Thailand, maybe a little reefer. But now, hardcore biker drugs are making inroads, and the Colombians are getting in there. That's what comes with capitalism.
Maybe we can import our drugs.
From China?
Cheaply.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't think they're paying labor that much, the drug guys that are doing it now. I hate to tell you. Anything a biker can make in a bathtub, don't put it in your head. That's my rule. That's my drug rule. Here's some other... I just want to get people ready for Malloy. That's why I'm doing the mundane stuff. For you people listening to L.A., in L.A., Malloy's coming. Malloy's coming on about midnight, truth seekers. But right now, I'm going to talk about how oral sex has gone up among teenagers.
Woo!
That's just a headline.
It's about time. Man.
What else are you going to do?
Boy, it sure was dry when I was a teenager.
Was it? There was some, I remember oral sex was my first, it was my entree into the world of sexuality.
Yeah.
It was like the greatest
I'm
day.
I'm going to tell you, that really
I feel
upset
like we talked
me.
About this before.
What?
Have we talked about this before?
Yeah, I was there.
I think we talked about this in one of the rehearsal shows. And we put it on one of the special tapes that we'll make available when everything else is gone. I'm having a deja vu right now in a huge way. What is that all about? Do you understand deja vus?
Mm-hmm.
What, did this happen already?
Mm-hmm.
Weird. This is getting weird, man. All right, I think I'm back. What?
That's why I don't like New York.
What? What is... Oh, my God. It's so weird, Jim, because I just thought we had this conversation like a few minutes ago.
No kidding. Really?
Did I talk about Chinese and the cocaine?
No.
Oh, my God. Are you screwing with my head?
No.
This isn't funny, you guys. This isn't funny. Why is Andy laughing? Is this some sort of setup? Did you put something in my soda? Hey, how come I'm bleeding? What? I'm sorry.
So, yeah, I'm glad we don't have time to talk about your oral sex experience in high school.
And I think I already talked about it, but this is an interesting study, that anal and oral sex. See, I threw that at the end. Do we have time to talk about anal sex in teenagers? No, it looks like we're running out of time.
Do we not have time is my question.
It's just all this stuff is going up. A lot of them think that it's better to give head than to get STDs, but there are some STDs that you can get that way, but not as many. And there's some people just don't want the guilt. You know what I mean? They don't want the guilt of sex, the mess, the pain. So, you know, what does it take to put it in your mouth? What is that? That's nothing. You know what I mean?
Hey.
There's worse things.
Words
to put
out
in your
of
mouth.
My mouth.
I mean, apparently, if I was to listen to Eric Schlosser and Michael Pollan, I mean, that's like the least dangerous thing you can put in your mouth, to be honest with you. Is one of those or one of them.
And I'll quote you.
Either
on
way, that thing the guy has or the other thing that the woman has. Those things, you know, 9 times out of 10 are cleaner than a burger. Really. Am I right?
And you know why kids are doing this earlier?
Why?
And more often?
Why?
Because of the hormones in beef.
I thought you were going to say because you could get them at McDonald's.
Just... Oh, man.
Oh, look, come on. A lot happened in the world today. Let's get to the business. Malloy's coming on. I don't want to leave a dirty table for him.
Malloy!
For the truth seekers. All right, this is Mark Maron, Short Order News. According to a new report, America's survival rate for newborn babies ranks near the bottom among modern nations. Nationally, the U.S. averages 5 deaths per 1,000 births, but each year that number spikes during prom season. Ray James, right?
Probably.
A full-time stay-at-home mother would earn $134,121 a year if paid for all her work, according to a study released Wednesday. That's nice. We'll just put that bit of information right over here next to slavery reparations, cars that run on water, and other things that'll never happen. That's a little misogynistic.
But it's real, man. It's real.
Hey, the truth sometimes is sexist. Is that what you're saying?
The truth is real.
All right. New research indicates the brains of lesbians react similarly to those of heterosexual men. The amazing biological similarity between the neurological structure inside of the male and lesbian head may explain why they often have the same haircut. That's the short order news for today. Oh, boy. I had a good time tonight, man.
Stay tuned for Malloy.
Things are just heating up, truth seekers. And don't get the wrong idea. Don't go on Malloy's site and say I'm mocking him. I have a lot of respect for him. I you know, to have that much energy and anger and to be that focused, that's a tremendous gift. It's a gift, and it's coming your way in about 45 seconds or so. But for us, what's going on tomorrow, man? Where's my little list? All this fun. Ah, here it is. Brent Hoff, editor of the new McSweeney DVD magazine, Wolfen. Patton Oswalt's in one episode of it where he stares at the camera for 5 minutes, just sitting there looking at it. Ed Begley Jr., of course, from Ed Begley Jr. fame.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been on everything. He's been, this is Spinal Tap. He drives around in the electric cars.
Does he still have that electric car?
He was on Arrested Development. You can ask him tomorrow, man. Write that down. Remind yourself.
Do you
ask
still
Ed
have
about electric car?
Electric car.
Good. Good night, sheeple. Warm.